Let's turn again to Galatians chapter 4 and verse 4. Galatians 4:4. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. As we look towards Washington, D.C., we often have this thought, we often say these words, they think they're above the law. We see them making laws, they are our lawmakers, and yet, with great frustration at times, we feel they don't obey them themselves. And even when they break the very laws they make, they do not suffer the penalties that you and I would suffer were we to do the same thing. And so we'll often say something like, it's one law for us and another law for them. It's one law for me and it's another law for her. They are the lawmakers, but they are not under the law. In fact, if we're really honest, we look in the mirror, we do the same things ourselves. Think, for example, of how we make laws for our children. You think, for example, when we're teaching them to drive and how we set limits on their speed. We make law and then we ourselves act above it and do the exact same things that we forbid and don't suffer any penalty for it. Or take, for example, media use. We set laws and limits on our children's media use, and we announce penalties for transgression. And yet, what would our children perhaps think if they were to see the media that we watch, that we consume in the course of a week? We are lawmakers, but often also act above the very laws we make. Well, this morning we want to look at a lawmaker who was actually and legitimately above the law, and yet who made a law and then made himself under it. We're looking, of course, at the Lord Jesus Christ. And especially these words that we read there in verse 4, made under the law. Someone who was above the law more than anyone else and yet came under the law more than anyone ever did. Notice, first of all, just very simply and briefly, the lawmaker made the law. Seems obvious, doesn't it? But when we think of the law of God, it is the law of Christ as well. He is the one who made it. He made the moral law, as summarized in the Ten Commandments. A perfect law of morality, a perfect and permanent law of morality for each one of us. He made the ceremonial law, a perfect temporary law for a phase of true religion. The laws about sacrifice, about festivals, about diet and cleanliness, these ceremonial laws which were perfect for a time, a specific phase of communicating the gospel of Christ through these symbols and pictures. He also made the civil law, the law for Israel, again, a perfect, though temporary law that was suited to the nation of Israel at that time and in that place. The lawmaker made the law moral, ceremonial, and civil. The lawmaker who made these laws is Jesus Christ. And you cannot say you love the lawmaker and hate the lawmaker's law. That's impossible. Because these laws that he made are not something detached from him, but they are an expression of him. They reflect who he is. They tell us about his character, his personality, his wisdom, his holiness, his justice, his truth. You cannot say, I love Jesus, if you hate his law. If you love the lawmaker, you love the laws he made. Oh, how love I thy law. It is my meditation all the day. The lawmaker made the law. Secondly, and again briefly, the lawmaker administers the law. It's not as if he made the law and then walked away from it. It's as if he announced it and then said, over to you. No, the law is still in his hands. You look at the Old Testament, he announces a summary of it in Exodus 20, as we read together, a summary of the moral law. But there are many more chapters that expound that summary and apply it. And then as Israel is going into the promised land in the book of Deuteronomy, he issues the law again in a new form with different applications of the same principles suited to the nation going into a new situation. And then we see even in Proverbs, every single proverb is traceable to one of the 10 moral laws of God. They are, again, practical expositions of that law, again, suited to specific people and times. And you see the prophets, they come and they announce the law and they exposit the law. They proclaim the law's demands. They warn with the law's threatenings. They promise with the law's rewards. And then Jesus comes, and he too, especially in the Sermon on the Mount, but elsewhere, he also expounds and applies the law. He was doing it through intermediaries in the Old Testament, but now he comes and does it directly in the New. He is administering the law. He is managing it. And he does that to this day. The very fact that we have the law read out to us is proof that Christ still has a regard for his law and wants it announced and proclaimed. He still sends us ministers of the gospel to explain and apply that law to our lives and warn us for our disobedience and promise rewards for obedience as well, for covenant faithfulness. Christ has not put his law aside. He's not given it up. He's not turned from it to something else. He is still the lawmaker and the law administrator. And ultimately, he will call us to account and everyone to account to give an account for our response to that law, for the deeds done in the body, whether good or evil. Christ will never lay down his law. He will never cease to administer it. He sat on his judgment seat when he announced it, and he will sit on his judgment seat at the end when he will examine us. The lawmaker made the law. The lawmaker administers the law. Thirdly, the lawmaker submitted to the law. That's especially what we have in front of us here. Made under the law, submitted to the law. We can say three things about this submission of the Son of God to the law of God. First of all, he did it with a head full of knowledge. He did it with a head full of knowledge. What do I mean by that? Well, he knew the law inside and out. He knew the law more than anyone ever did. You can conceivably imagine somebody who would say, oh, okay, I'll come and I'll go under that law of that nation or of that institution or of that organization for a time. But then when you come under it, you realize, I didn't realize how extensive their laws and their regulations and their rules were. And you withdraw from it, or you try in some way to mitigate it. You went into it without full knowledge. But Jesus didn't. As the lawmaker and the law administrator, he went into this with a head full of knowledge. He knew every single law he had ever made and all the applications of it. And yet, knowing all that he knew, all that the law entailed, all that it demanded, knowing its exacting demands and its excruciating penalties, yet he submitted. He came under that law. The biggest library of law in the world is the Harvard Law Library. Very difficult to get estimates of how many books are in it. It's somewhere in the region of 1.5 million books. And of course, now it's with the internet united to multiple other libraries with multiple other books. It's reckoned to have something like connections to 73 other libraries, about 18 million volumes in total. But even if you just take the physical books, 1.5 million books of law, you think, how could anyone ever think that they can administer the law? I'm sure there must be students who go to that university, I'm going to be a lawyer, and they walk into that library and think, I'll never be a lawyer. It's impossible. Once they know what there is to know, never mind knowing it, but knowing what there is to know, it's overwhelming. It's impossible. But Jesus came under the divine law, which is far more extensive, far wider, far deeper, far higher, far longer than any human law. Yet knowing all about it, everything, inside out, all the minutiae, all the detail, all the possibilities, yet came under it. At no point in his life under that law did he say, I didn't know that. If I'd known this, I would never have done that. No, no. At every point, he had a head full of knowledge. Secondly, he had a will full of freedom. A will full of freedom. When you look at the language here, it says he was made under the law. And when you read of somebody being made something, it might communicate the idea of being forced into it. I made him do it, or he was made to do it. No, that's not what's being conveyed here at all. In no sense was Christ made to do something. It wasn't some other force that came and made him under the law. No, he made himself under the law. He was not a passive victim here. He was a full-hearted, willing volunteer. He voluntarily put himself under this law, subject to this law, answerable to this law, accountable to this law. And his willingness to do this was full. It wasn't a 50-50, 60-40, even 99.1%. No, it was a 100% willing, free choice to do this. Try and think of it like this. Those of you who have pets, you might have a dog. You have laws for your dog that you yourself don't obey. That's fine. You wouldn't expect of the same law for yourself and a dog. So you have a dog, and for your dog you say, okay, there are certain parts of this house you just don't go. There are certain pieces of furniture you just don't sit on. There are certain times of the day that you have your dog do this or not do that, and there are places you will take it and then places you will forbid it from going. There are things you will forbid it from doing. There is a law for your dog. If you were to probably write it out, it would be probably quite a long list of laws for your dog. And they're all fitting and they're all right. They're all appropriate for a dog. Then imagine one day that you had this thought. I'm going to be made under dog law. I'm going to come under the law of dogs. I'm going to live in exactly the same way as I make my dog live. I'm going to be subject to the same limits and boundaries and rules and instructions. You see, I'd never do that. Why wouldn't you do that? Well, because that's a dog, and I'm human. That's like way down there, and I'm way up here. That would be humiliating. Nowhere near as humiliating. Nowhere near a bigger gap as the divine lawmaker becoming a human lawkeeper. And not just for a day, or for a week, or for a month, but all life long. And he did it without hesitation, without one pause for thought, without a moment thinking, should I, shouldn't I? No, as we read in Psalm 40, Jesus says prophetically, to do your will I take delight. I have your law in my heart. He came with a will full of freedom, freely chosen, fully done. A head full of knowledge, a will full of freedom, and a heart full of love. A heart full of love. He did this because he loved the law he made himself, that he saw being broken and defamed and disgraced and tarnished for years and years and years, and he wanted to lift up that law, to magnify it and make it honorable again. He wanted to show the law in all its beauty, in all its holiness, and all its wisdom. He came because he loved this law. But he also came because he loved lawbreakers. Isn't that astonishing? How can you love the law and want to lift it up and make it honorable and magnify it and love the ones who trash it? How can you do that? What can explain that? And yet that's what he did. Love for lawbreakers who who did not keep the law, who did not want to keep the law, who could not suffer fully the law's penalties. He says, I'm coming for you as well. I'm coming for you as well. He loved the law and he loved the lawbreakers. These were the two impelling powers in his life that drove him to this, made under the law. Make me under the law, that I may show love for the law and love for the lawbreakers. Not for their breaking of the law. No, not that. But a love that would deliver them from that lawbreaking lifestyle. The lawmaker, out of love for lawbreakers, became a lawkeeper and a law satisfier. So the lawmaker made the law. The lawmaker administered the law. The lawmaker submitted to the law with a head full of knowledge, a will full of freedom, and a heart full of love. Fourthly, the lawmaker suffered the law's penalties. The lawmaker suffered the law's penalties. This is what's often called the passive obedience of Christ. And it's usually put something like this. Christ's obedience is viewed as both active and passive. The active, and we'll look at that in a moment, is his actively obeying the law and all its requirements, and the passive obedience is his suffering of the law's penalties, his willingness to obey the demand to suffer the penalties that the law required. So he's actively obeying the law's precepts, and he's passively suffering the law's penalties. Now, you mustn't think he was actively obeying for 33 years of his life, and then the passive obedience, the suffering of the law's penalties began. No, not at all. Active and passive obedience aren't two phases of one life. They're two ingredients of one life. They're always there, both of them at the same time. At every point in Christ's life, he is actively obeying and passively suffering. From the moment of his conception, he came under the law, under the law's precepts and under the law's penalties, obeying the law's precepts, suffering the law's penalties, all through his life. As soon as he was born then, we think of his passive obedience, his suffering. The penalty for all his people's law-breaking was fully transferred to him, fully and completely. You think of all the penalties due to all of God's people in all ages and all countries. All the penalties for all their law breaking. You think Harvard's library is big? And what happened to that massive body with all the transgressions of the law and all the penalties that each of them demanded? When he was made of a woman, he was made under the law. The moment of his conception, that whole body of penalty was transferred to him. It became his. It didn't become his gradually. It didn't become his later in life at his baptism or at Gethsemane or in his trial. It was there throughout his whole life. He lived under that law and its penalty his whole existence, carrying that, bearing that weighty burden of guilt. The lawmaker was treated as a lawbreaker, viewed as a lawbreaker, punished as a lawbreaker, though he never broke the law. It's astonishing, that, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever had that experience of Not being sure if you're within the law or not. It's not a pleasant experience. It might be your tax return. You've sent it off and you think, did I do that right? Did I remember everything? And what if I get that wrong? I could end up in court, could end up with a huge fine, I could end up ruining my reputation. Sleepless nights, worrying through the daytime. It might last for weeks, maybe months, maybe till the next tax year, and then you think, oh no, that's right. You've got to keep, 5 years of tax returns? I've got 5 years to worry about this. And sometimes you forget it, and then sometimes it comes back again, and there's that anxiety. Not knowing. Did I break the law? Am I subject to its penalties? And then sometimes you realize, hey, I probably am. I probably did break the law, and I probably am subject to its penalties. I hope they don't find out. I hope I'm never audited. I mean, if I admit it, I'll then suffer the penalty anyway. And what do? It's a horrible situation to be in. Or like, for example, this summer, I was doing some work around the house that needed permits from building planning departments. And you try and navigate that. All the different laws and rules and regulations, all the different departments you've got to deal with. And you try and put it all together and you submit it and you hope and pray you've got it right. And then you realize there are more qualifications. Then you realize laws have changed. And then you've got the plumbing inspection and the mechanical inspection, the electrical inspection, and it goes on and on. And you know you've not done everything perfectly. And then you worry. You think, man, I've poured tens of thousands of dollars into that maybe. And I think, what if I've got that wrong? And they tell me to tear the whole thing out. It's a horrible situation to be in, isn't it? Just the anxiety of fearing penalty under law. And what relief would it give you, even on that human level, for somebody to come along to you and just say, don't worry. You say, well, it's easy for you to say, don't worry. No, he says, don't worry because I'll take care of the penalties. Just you write in and tell them, anything wrong with this, phone this number, speak to this guy. You can sleep that night. There's relief, there's removal, that it's transferred over on a far greater scale. This is what Jesus does. He comes along to you, and it's not that he comes to you with the possibility you might have broken his law. It's with the utter certainty. He knows the penalty is there. He knows the law is broken. He knows the penalty must be suffered. And with that full knowledge, he says, transfer to me. I was made under the law for situations just like this. You can sleep easy. You can rest easy. You don't need to worry about this ever again. Because I was made under the law's penalties, and I suffered the curses of the law, all of them, for all of my people. It changes everything, doesn't it? So that whenever conscience accuses, you just say, gone, transferred, see Jesus, speak to him. The lawmaker suffered the law's penalties. But lastly, and maybe even more gloriously, I think, at least at times, the lawmaker obeyed the law's precepts. You say, how can that be more glorious than Jesus suffering the law's penalties? I'll tell you why. Jesus suffering the law's penalties dealt with your disobedience, believer. He dealt with your disobedience. He got you, as it were, out of the hole that you were in. But there's still a mountain to climb. There's still an obedience to offer. You think of Adam in the garden. The covenant of life, the covenant of works. He was given a law to obey in order to merit and earn reward. Wasn't enough that he just kept here on this level. No, God gave him a law that if he obeyed, he would be rewarded with extra life, at least more secure life. A life that could never be lost. And similarly for us, it's not enough that the penalty be removed, that the disobedience be dealt with. An obedience also has to be rendered. Christ suffering the law's penalties gets us out of the hole. It gets us out of overdrawn to zero balance. But we need more than zero balance. Remember what Jesus said to the Pharisees, except your righteousness exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall no way enter into the kingdom of heaven. There's an obedience to be rendered. In that sense, Christ's suffering is not enough. If all Christ did for you and I, believer, was die for our sins, it's not enough. We also need him to live for our righteousness. Yes, we need his passive obedience, but we also need his active obedience. We need more than the removal of a negative. We need the addition of a positive. And thank God that's also included in this phrase, made under the law. Not just under the law's penalties, but under the law's precepts. Not just that he suffered the penalty of law, but he obeyed the precepts of the law. Not just that he suffered the law's penalties for all his people, but he obeyed the law's precepts for all his people. He gave a righteousness that exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, a perfect obedience to every aspect of his law. It's no less necessary, equally necessary as his suffering. And you think of that he lived for 33 years and he never committed a sin. That's amazing, but something's even more amazing than that. You might say, well, he never committed a sin because he had a holy nature. He had an aversion to sin. That's an advantage. Well, there is something even more amazing than him never committing a sin. And it's this. He never omitted a duty. He never omitted a duty. If you ask me, I think that's even more amazing. That he lived every single day and put his head on his pillow at night and said, I did everything I should have done. In fact, he did say that at one point in his life. He said, I do always those things that please him. Always. You think of all the areas of life that you have to obey God in. You think of these Ten Commandments. You think of even one of them and all their applications. You think of loving your neighbor as yourself. And who is my neighbor, we're told, and we're pointed to just about everyone in around us that we can see. And you think that every single day he could lie down and say, I loved my neighbor as myself. I did it in all my relationships, I conducted myself without a flaw. Every single thing I should have done, I did do. And he still slept, and he still ate, and he still had time for friends, and yet, at every point in his life, he could say, perfect obedience. Perfect obedience. And this too, just as, believer, your penalty is transferred fully to him so his righteousness is transferred fully to you. Not a slice of it. It's not like, okay, I've got a million people, so you each get a millionth. No. You get the full divine righteousness. You get the righteousness of God. All of it. That's yours, believer. As much yours as it is his. That changes everything. That changes the way you view the law, doesn't it? Changes the way you view the law. If you have that, you look at Sinai and the smoke is gone. The trembling is gone. The lightning's gone and the thunder's gone. You're looking at a beautiful green mountain covered in flowers. There's not a hint of threat or danger to you from the law of God. Not its penalties to be suffered, not its precepts to be obeyed as a way of salvation. Sinai, the law is completely transformed. Don't let a wisp of smoke trouble your conscience. Don't let one peal of thunder ring inside your conscience. Don't let it tremble for a moment without getting to Christ and laying hold again on that active and passive obedience of Christ. It changes the way you view the law. It's no longer threatening, impossible. That's how you can say, I love that law now. It changes the way you view Christ. He didn't just die for me, he lived for me. You read the gospel narratives and you're not just waiting till the last chapters now for your salvation. Every single chapter is your salvation. That's where he's working out your righteousness, believer. Every single word and deed is yours. That's your righteousness in these very pages. That's what's been transferred to you, that perfect life you're seeing lived out there. Changes the way we view the future. You think ahead. You think, I'm going to be just as saved in a week's time as I am today. In a month's time, in a year's time, in a decade's time, you cannot be more or less saved than you are today in this sense. That every penalty is gone and every precept has been obeyed on your behalf, believer. That doesn't get better. What you need to do is appropriate it better and embrace it better and appreciate it better and live out of it better. Your future is secure. It's far more secure than Adam's was in paradise. This changes the way we view death. When we come to die, it may be you think of all the things you've done and shouldn't have done, and you think Christ covers that. But what about the things I should have done and I never did? Oh, what a list. Even you think on one day that all the to-dos that were never done, all the phone calls that were never made, all the conversations that were never had, all the money that wasn't given to worthy causes, all the words we didn't speak when we should have spoken them, all the things we should have done, and they mount up day after day, week after week, year after year. We get to our deathbed and we look back and we see this great mountain that has to be done over it. This changes, this makes that mountain into a plain, because written over it is done and it turns into dust and evaporates and blows away. I look back then over my whole life from my deathbed and I see every transgression's penalty has been paid, and every single duty has been done, and I can then turn to face my God and say, Christ is all. That's it. Can you do that? Unbeliever here today, have you any hope of this? If Christ is not yours today, the penalty still has to be paid. If Christ is not yours today, the precepts still must be obeyed. How can you face not just death, but how can you face the day knowing that? There's such a mountain of debt in front of you. Change your life, change your death, change your eternity by coming to this great lawmaker who made the law, administered the law, submitted to the law, suffered the law's penalties, and obeyed the law's precepts. This Son of God, born, made of a woman, made under the law. Why? To redeem them that were under the law. There's your plea. How can I get this? There's how you get this. You bring this to God and say, I'm under the law. I'm under the law's penalties. And I'm under the law's precepts. And here's someone who says he came to set me free. Lord, deliver. Redeem. You'll have heard perhaps of the famous theologian Gresham Machen, one of the founders of Westminster Seminary. On his deathbed, he wrote a very short note to one of his colleagues, John Murray. It was the last note that John Murray got from him. It was a telegram. And on it, it said this, I'm so thankful for the active obedience of Christ. No hope without it. Let's pray.